Good Friday morning to you, and welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget you can take the show with you 24/7 by checking out the podcast. It's the Nick Craig Show, available wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. We start off our show this morning with a horrific tragedy unfolding at Florida State University in Tallahassee yesterday afternoon as a gunman made his way onto campus, killing two people, five others still fighting for their life this morning in the hospital. This is the sheriff in that county describing the situation and providing the details on the individual who was responsible, the individual who perpetrated these acts. Wild story unfolding in Florida.
The shooter is 20-year-old Phoenix Eichner, and he's the son of a Leon County Sheriff deputy. Our Deputy Eichner, has been with the Leon County Sheriff's Office for over 18 years. She has a tremendous job that she's done. Her service to this community has been exceptional. Unfortunately, her son had access to one of her weapons, and that was one of the weapons that was found at the scene. And we are continuing that investigation into how that weapon was used and what other weapons perhaps he may have had access to. The alleged shooter was also a long-standing member of the Leon County Sheriff's Office Citizen Advisory or Youth Advisory Council. So he has been steeped in the Leon County Sheriff's Office family, engaged in a number of training programs that we have. So it's not a surprise to us that he had access to weapons. This event is tragic in more ways than you people in the audience could ever fathom from a law enforcement perspective. But I will tell you this, we will make sure that we do everything we can to prosecute and make sure that we send a message to folks that this will never be tolerated here in Leon County, and I dare say across this state and across this nation.
A wild situation unfolding there as we learn the identity of the 20-year-old shooter, as you just heard there from the sheriff in Leon County, Florida. Well, the individual, 20-year-old Phoenix Eichner, was not only a student at FSU, but also the son of an 18-year deputy sheriff within the Leon County Sheriff's Office. As you heard there, the individual, the 20-year-old individual Phoenix, used and I guess got access to one of his mother's firearms, a law enforcement issued firearm, bringing it onto campus yesterday morning around 11:50 a.m., unloading on individuals within the school campus community, and then unfortunately two people being killed on the scene. They were not FSU students, according to authorities. It just says students, so they presumably could be employees, staff members, but they were not students. Obviously, the area is still being combed over this morning as an active crime scene is continuing. Fortunately, according to the Tallahassee police chief, they report there is no further threat to the community. Fox News Digital was at FSU on Thursday evening when a group of students held a vigil for those injured and killed during the attacks. Pictures of that showed several students kneeling at the scene of the shooting, which was still covered in yellow tape as authorities continued their investigation. FSU student William Schatz spoke to Fox News Digital Thursday night about the incident. He said he was prepared for a presentation with a group of fellow students that was scheduled to take place a little after 1 p.m. He said, quote, "Some people stayed in the library, but my instinct was I see people running. I'm going to run with them." He also credited first responders for taking control of the situation. With this unfolding, as you can imagine, the FBI was also dispatched, and agents from its Tallahassee field office were quickly on the scene as they're located geographically pretty close to FSU's campus. The ATF Tampa office also confirmed that they were on the scene assisting law enforcement, and the FBI's Jacksonville office is also seeking information about the shooter as well. FSU has canceled all classes through Friday and said that athletic events in Tallahassee were canceled through the weekend. The president of FSU, Richard McCullough, issued a statement saying, quote, "There will be more updates updates in the days ahead and more time to reflect and heal. But now we mourn it together. We lean on one another and we remember who we are. We are Florida State. We are a family and we stand together. Individuals, of course, recounting the situation that unfolded in front of them. The shooter is alive and in custody. We're unsure this morning. It's still very much an ongoing investigation. Not sure what the root cause of this shooting was. Those details are still very much unclear. But as the time goes on, as prosecution continues, and as you heard there from the Leon County Sheriff, they're going to use all of their resources, all of their tools available to prosecute this individual, Dan Bongino. The deputy director of the FBI saying, quote, "The FBI is on scene at FSU. I am en route back to D.C. from our L.A. office, but we are getting updates on the situation while we are in the air. We will provide updates as soon as possible." Ron DeSantis chiming in, the Florida governor. "Our prayers are with the FSU family and state law enforcement in this active response." FSU Tallahassee's campus is just about 485 acres. The university has 403 buildings and a student body of more than 44,000 individuals and 16,000 employees. A very large school over at FSU at any given point with all of those students and employees. You're looking at 20, 30, 40,000 individuals on campus at a time, including staff, personnel, and the student body. A very large campus, continuing to track those details this morning. Of course, it took the media just mere hours to take this a tragedy, as they always do, and try and turn it into a political point. Yesterday evening, Trump in the Oval Office signing executive orders asked about gun control, because that's the way that the left always tries to perpetrate and play out these situations when they unfold. "We need more gun control." Here was the president's response to this shortly before 6 p.m. yesterday evening.
"There are now two deceased following that shooting at Florida State University. Following and amid that, is there any changes that you want to see to gun legislation? Anything you see broken with gun laws in our
country?" I'm going to have to look. I'm a big advocate of the Second Amendment. I have been from the beginning. I protected it. And these things are terrible. But the gun doesn't do the shooting. The people do. It's, you know, a phrase that's used probably too often. I will tell you that it's a shame. I'm just hearing about it now. I just hear about it. I know the area very well. I know the school very well. I know everything about it. It's Florida. And we'll have more to say about it later.
What do you mean when you say there will be more to say about it?
Only in terms of what happened. As far as legislation is concerned, this has been going on for a long time. I have an obligation to protect the Second Amendment. I ran on the Second Amendment, among many other things, and I will always protect the Second Amendment.
I think a very good response from President Trump, as members of the media, as always, try and spin this into, well, we need to look at gun control. We need to immediately get into politics on this. The president said, hey, the gun doesn't do the shooting. The people do. Which is, of course, an accurate assessment of the situation as a whole. The gun itself does not walk onto a campus and kill two individuals. It's a very damaged, troubled individual that perpetrates those attacks. The president also noting, I have an obligation to protect the Second Amendment. It is, in fact, enshrined in the United States Constitution, to the chagrin of left-wing media, to the chagrin of Democrats who, as this shooting was unfolding, were spending their time on social media speculating about it and talking about gun control. I mean, it's a rinse and repeat every single time some sort of shooting takes place. I will kind of point to the irony, though, of the discussion about gun control, right? We talk about gun control in relation to shootings like this that happen on college campuses or in schools across America. Yet there's no discussion on gun control in major cities across America where dangerous, violent criminals, individuals many of times who are already convicted felons, cannot legally possess, legally own firearms, do in fact possess and own those illegal firearms, and then, of course, still have access to them, and many of them involved in drug trafficking and various sorts of gang activities in which they are shooting and killing people every single night. That happens in almost every major metropolitan area across the United States. No discussion on gun control there. No discussion on individuals that have already had those rights stripped away due to their previous actions, yet still have access to firearms, still have access to these weapons, and still commit a mass acts of atrocity. The media doesn't pick up on those. It doesn't fit their narrative. They can't use it as an opportunity to push gun control legislation. They can't use it as an opportunity to infringe on American Second Amendment rights. So they don't say anything about it at all. I mean, if we're being honest and fair about it, that's the reality of the situation. But it doesn't fit a political narrative. It doesn't fit a political agenda. So there's no discussion of it. I mean, I do the morning show on WBT in Charlotte. I opened the Monday morning as I finished up and threw to the newscast at 6 o'clock. There was 3 shootings over the weekend in Charlotte. 3 people shot and killed. I mean, no discussion on that at all. That's just a regular weekend in Charlotte. I mean, where's the discussion on gun control there? For folks that have been with me for quite some time, you go back to when I was hosting the morning show here in Wilmington. How many times did I cover a story where you had an individual that was charged with what? Possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. Individuals being picked up by law enforcement, whether it be a drug stop, something else taking place. They were charged with a plethora of things, a whole bunch of drug charges, right? Dealing, possession, selling, trade, whatever. And all the way down at the bottom, same thing almost every single time. Possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. The sad reality is, and this is the reality of the gun control legislation that the left wants to talk about, it does not affect law-abiding citizens, right? Law-abiding citizens, if they are convicted felons, well, first of all, they're not convicted felons because they're law-abiding citizens, but those individuals are not the ones going out and picking up illegal firearms and committing acts of violence on streets across America. If you're hell-bent on being involved in illicit and illegal activities and you're going to use a firearm either for enforcement or for protection, you're going to get an illegal gun. You're going to find a way to get possession of an illegal firearm. I have covered it literally for years, 3.5 years on the radio. There was a story, multiple stories a month, covering that exact same situation where you had individuals being picked up with those illegal firearms. So, I mean, if we really want to be serious and talk about gun control, if we really want to be serious and talk about violence that takes place in our communities, there's plenty of discussions to have. There's plenty of different ways to talk about it. There's plenty of different discussions that we can have. I mean, here's a story literally from just a couple of days ago. This is out in Whiteville, Columbus County. Whiteville police have arrested a suspect who allegedly shot and killed a 19-year-old on J.K. Powell Boulevard and Washington Street. Capri Omar McMillan, 32, of Whiteville, was arrested in Lumberton. He was charged for 2 counts of possessions of firearm by a felon, murder, and discharging a weapon into an occupied dwelling or moving vehicle. This happened 3 days ago in Whiteville, Columbus County. I mean, 45 minutes down the road, 30 minutes down the road. Here's an individual who, already a convicted felon, has access to a firearm, shoots and kills a 19-year-old on J.K. Powell Boulevard in the city of Whiteville. So there are already laws in place. There are restrictions and regulations in place. How does 32-year-old Capri Omar McMillan get access to a firearm? There's already a restriction against him. And the answer is very simple. For individuals that want to commit acts of violence, for individuals that want to perpetrate violence on other people, they will get access to a firearm every single time. Contrary to what the left wants you to believe, contrary to what Democrats will yell and scream about in Washington, D.C., about gun control this now, gun control that, here's your story. How does this happen? There are already laws in place. There are already laws banning an individual that is already a convicted felon from legally owning, possessing, or buying a firearm. You can't go to a gun store as a convicted felon, pass a background check, and purchase a firearm. Yet this guy had one, shot and killed a 19-year-old in Whiteville 3 days ago. This is just the first story I just picked off WECT's homepage. It's right there. So don't gaslight me into the whole gun control argument. It's so disappointing that every single time one of these situations unfolds, the left is immediately, and the media is immediately jumping to gun control. Every single time. Obviously, gun control is not the issue here. If gun control, as the left claims that if putting restrictions on firearms worked, this 32-year-old man wouldn't have shot and killed a 19-year-old in Whiteville 3 days ago. If gun control and gun regulations work like the left, I guess, believes that they will, or hopes that they will, as they strip away everybody's constitutional right, a situation like this doesn't happen. The laws are already in place and it doesn't work. So don't gaslight me on gun control, especially 4 hours after the whole situation happens. I think Trump's response was phenomenal. I think he pushed back handedly on the media, saying again that the gun doesn't do the shooting, an individual does, and that he has an obligation to protect the Second Amendment, as every president of the United States should have. Obviously, the attitude and tone has been very different over the last couple of years with that different administration. Turning our attention to some local news this morning as it relates to firearms and guns, we did have some breaking news yesterday morning about a WPD situation taking place not far from Shipyard Boulevard, South College Road area. The Wilmington Police Department has released more information on that shooting that took place yesterday in Wilmington. According to WPD, the man who fired a rifle at law enforcement has been identified as 40-year-old David Jacobs of Wilmington. He is currently still in critical condition this morning at Novant Health New Hanover Regional Medical Center. According to WPD, officers responded to reports of shots being fired in the 4800 block of Whitner Drive around 3 a.m. When they arrived, a citizen pointed out a residence where Jacobs had a rifle. Once at the residence, he began to fire at the police from his home. WPD Lieutenant Greg Willett said, quote, there was some information in the calls that indicated that someone who could be suffering from some mental health issues, they were making some claims about they were being tracked and various things. WPD immediately evacuated the area and started negotiations with the suspect, which continued until around 6:30 a.m. Willett noted, quote, the initial responding officers attempted contact to start preliminary negotiations with him. More officers arrived, the SWAT team was activated, and whenever our SWAT team is activated, our crisis negotiators are also activated. WPD said that Jacobs complied at first, but then began to threaten officers and pick up his rifle. That's when WPD officers fired and struck him. The area was previously under shelter, and WPD advised anybody yesterday morning in the 4800 block of Whitner Drive to stay indoors. When WECT News arrived on the scene yesterday morning, one neighbor spoke out and said that they heard gunshots. They said, quote, we woke up to rapid gunfire around 6:30 in the morning, jumped out of bed and ran downstairs to see what was going on. I tried to kind of open the door and go outside, and an officer immediately told me to get back inside the house. The State Bureau of Investigation has been called to investigate the incident, and WPD expects Jacobs to face numerous charges, including assault on a law enforcement officer with a firearm, and guess what? Possession of a firearm by a felon. Possession of a firearm by a felon. This is still an ongoing investigation, according to WPD. Additional charges may be applied. So there you go. The guy yesterday attempting to shoot at law enforcement, picking up a rifle, aiming it at law enforcement. How did he have that? Who knows? He's already a convicted felon. So your gun regulation doesn't work. Two stories here. One literally happening about 24 hours ago here in Wilmington. So get off your high horse on gun control. Get off your high horse that the government legislating every single facet of your life actually does anything and has any meaningful impact, because the fact and matter is it doesn't. For individuals like this person who want to have access to a firearm, even if they're a felon, they'll find one, they'll get one. They'll buy it on the black market, they'll steal it from an unlocked vehicle, they'll find a way to illegally obtain a firearm. They always do, they always have, they always will. Right? They're convicted felons. These are individuals that have already served time for whatever they were charged with, in some cases, multiple things that they've been charged with to receive that felony conviction. And then they are still interested in a life of crime. They're not reformed. They're not changed in any meaningful way. They get back out on the streets. Same thing unfolds. So tell me how the United States Senate or the U.S. House is going to legislate this individual, 40-year-old David Jacobs of Wilmington. How are they going to legislate this guy from having a gun? What are they going to do? He's already a convicted felon. he already can't legally purchase, obtain it, or even have it on his person as a convicted felon. So what are you going to do here? The answer is nothing. So the left wants to strip away my rights. The left wants to strip away your rights and your family's rights and your neighbor's rights, who are law-abiding citizens, to have firearms to protect ourselves, to have firearms for sport, to have firearms for leisure activity. That's what the left wants to do. They don't care about David Jacobs. They don't care about the guy in Whiteville that killed the 19-year-old. The gun control conversation as it relates to that is irrelevant. Mum is the word when it comes to those scenarios and situations. But when you've got a 20-year-old student at FSU who grabs a firearm that he didn't legally obtain, stole it from his mother, who was an 18-year sheriff's deputy, the left wants to talk about gun control. What a disgusting group of people. I mean, seriously. Literally waiting not even a couple of hours before getting into a political diatribe over gun control and regulations and restrictions. Give me a freaking break. Open up a newspaper. Go read about the crime that's taking place in your city and your community and all of the individuals that have access to illegal firearms. Before you start lecturing me and somehow it's my fault and my responsibility that somebody in Florida acted inappropriately with a firearm. Before you hang that around my neck, let's look at all of the other individuals in our communities. So that's the latest on those two stories that we are continuing to track this morning. Not expecting a whole lot more in the standoff yesterday here in Wilmington. The individual's in custody. In custody in the hospital, obviously in critical condition at Novant Health. Not sure how his status will progress. We'll keep an eye on that. And of course, still very much an active situation unfolding in Florida this morning. Likely to see some pretty big news unfolding on that in the next couple of days and weeks. He is in custody, and we're just gonna have to wait and see what we learn from law enforcement as that situation continues to unfold. Turning our attention to some international news this morning, Secretary of State Marco Rubio indicated that it needs to be determined within the next couple of days whether achieving a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine, quote, is doable in the short term, warning that he thinks the United States will, quote, move on if it's not achievable. Rubio said that if it is not possible, he thinks President Donald Trump probably at some point is just going to say, okay, well, we're done. But Rubio noted that the U.S. will help either or both sides if they are serious about peace. He notes, quote, if it's not going to happen, then we're just going to move on. And this is an unfortunate situation that's unfolding. The president has attempted to work with both sides on this. He's attempted to work with the Ukrainian president, who claims he wants peace, but yet still has not signed that mineral rights deal, which apparently could be signed sometime next week. I was reading about that earlier this morning. Some delays there. Of course, dealing with the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, is got to be just an absolute minefield to try and work with, as you've got an individual in Putin that seemingly does not listen to reason. Someone who seemingly cannot wrap his head around how he has already lost this war. The idea that he is going to win or take over large portions of Ukraine in some sort of military revitalization is not going to happen. The lines have essentially been standstill for years now as the fighting continues, as hundreds of thousands of individuals on both sides have lost their lives. It is a miserable situation, and I don't know why both Putin and Zelensky are both not begging Donald Trump to get this peace deal dealt with. The war continues to rage with President Vladimir Zelensky declaring in a post, quote, this is how Russia began this Good Friday, with ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and maiming our people and our cities. U.S. Representative Don Bacon, the Republican out of Nebraska, staunchly supports Ukraine and wants the U.S. to provide the Eastern European nation with arms to bolster its war efforts. He told the Fox News, quote, European allies in the U.S. should arm Ukraine to the max and help them defend their country against the Russians and now North Korea and the Chinese. So this situation, what started off pretty rocky, what then seemingly was progressing. We had the discussion a couple of weeks ago about a potential ceasefire, at least on boats and various marine activity in and around the area. That seemed like a good step. I presumed things were unfolding and happening in unfolding and progressing forward behind the scenes. Doesn't appear that's the case. I'm sure part of Rubio's comments are trying to essentially force the hand of both sides. I'm sure that's what's going on here, is that you've got Marco Rubio making these comments in public saying, hey, we're just going to walk away if you guys aren't serious, attempting to bring both sides into the equation, bring both individuals to the table to say, all right, let's get serious about this, because as it appears right now, neither side is. I mean, they can claim that they are, but if these two guys wanted peace, and I would say Zelensky's more in the camp of wanting peace than Putin, because it's going to be a terrible hit to his ego, a terrible hit to the strong Russian persona that he tries to portray to the whole world. But the reality is he's lost. I mean, it's over with for him. He's not winning the war. He's not taking over Ukraine. If he was going to do that, he would have had to do it 2.5 years ago, right? At this point, that's not happening. The military has been depleted. The morale amongst the fighters on the front lines is atrocious. It's just it's a miserable situation for him. But he's got too much of an ego, too prideful to step aside and say, okay, let's get this thing over with and get back to some peace. And according to Rubio, seemingly telegraphing for the administration, he says, come to the table or we're walking away. And that's an unfortunate situation. Sucks that it's reached that point. But unfortunately, if both sides won't come to the equation, there's nothing else for the United States to do. I mean, now Europe claimed just a couple of weeks ago that they were going to be the ones bringing this whole thing to an end. So maybe the great European leaders who have sat on their hands and done nothing for almost 3 years now, maybe they can walk forward and get some of this dealt with, since they claim and seem to indicate they have all of the answers. They were going to step in when Zelensky was treated so unfairly, so poorly by President Trump. Maybe they can step in and get this thing cleared up. My guess, probably not, because they've done very little this entire time. But for whatever reason, they continue with some of their rhetoric as it relates to the war between Russia and Ukraine. We'll keep an eye on it right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, a pretty big Supreme Court situation set to take place over the next couple of days, or next couple of weeks, rather. The Supreme Court announced yesterday that it will hold oral arguments next month to consider whether the Trump administration can permanently implement an executive order aimed at ending birthright citizenship. The birthright citizenship order seeks to limit automatic citizenship to children born in the United States to parents who are citizens or lawful permanent residents. Specifically, it excludes children born to undocumented mothers, those in the United States temporarily, or children whose fathers lack legal status or citizenship. Under the directive, federal agencies were instructed to stop recognizing U.S. citizenship for children born after February 19th. The High Court has scheduled the hearing for May the 15th, so coming up here in about 3 weeks at 10 a.m., to hear the Justice Department's request for emergency relief. These injunctions have so far prevented the federal government from implementing a new framework that would deny automatic citizenship to children born in the United States to parents without permanent legal status. You've heard the term before, anchor baby. That's what we're talking about. Individuals who come to the United States, many cases illegally, in the late stages of their pregnancy, have a child. That child is by default a U.S. citizen because they were born on U.S. soil, and it brings forth a pathway for mass migration within families. Anchor babies, that's the term. The administration is asking the court to scale back three federal injunctions that currently prevent enforcement of President Trump's order across the country. If the Supreme Court grants the request, the administration would only be restricted from applying the executive order to a limited group: the individual plaintiffs, certain immigration activist groups, and residents of 22 states. The acting Solicitor General wrote in the application to the court, quote, "Enough is enough. urging the justices to limit the injunctions to the individual plaintiffs and specific group members involved in the case. Quote, at very least, she added, the court should permit federal agencies to prepare and issue public guidance on this new policies. Opponents of the order have urged the Supreme Court to maintain lower court rulings. Officials from 18 states, along with Washington, D.C. and San Francisco, argued in court filings that the administration's request would effectively strip citizenship from potentially hundreds of thousands of children born in the United States. Now, important to note that this is not looking back and changing people's citizenship status. The date it was supposed to start on February the 19th, and it would be for all children born after that date, February 19th. This was not going back in the calendar and finding every single individual born in the United States to parents who are legally in the country and stripping away their citizenship. Not the case at all. But of course, as you know, all these states, Washington, D.C. and San Francisco, make their arguments in court, they blow the situation out of proportion. This birthright citizenship thing is very interesting. Obviously, it's not a new story. It's been something that you've heard on the right for quite some time now. But the fact that the United States Supreme Court is going to take up oral arguments, this could be one of the biggest decisions that the United States Supreme Court has ever made. I mean, this could be one of the largest decisions that this court has ever made. You know, you talk about generational decisions or generational decisions from the United States Supreme Court. This absolutely could be one of them. Right, last month, the president asked the Supreme Court to intervene. He's following the process like John Roberts told him to. This is, of course, after those four federal judges blocked the president's executive order from taking place. Because, of course, why not? Why not? The Trump order reads as this in relation to the 14th Amendment. It is the policy of the United States that no department or agency of the United States government shall issue documents recognizing United States citizenship or accept documents issued by state, local, or other governments or authorities purporting to recognize United States citizenship to persons when that person's mother was unlawfully present in the United States and the person's father was not a United States citizen or lawful permanent resident at the time of said person's birth, or when that person's mother present in the United States was lawfully but temporarily in the United States and the person's father is not a United States citizen or lawful permanent resident at the time of the birth. This is arguing over the interpretation on the 14th Amendment. Those oral arguments are going to be very interesting to watch. Let's see, the 15th is a Thursday, so it is about three and a half weeks away from that taking place. So we'll keep an eye on that. It should be a major decision from the United States Supreme Court, regardless of what side they come down on. One way or the other, it will be a huge decision from the nation's highest court. We'll keep an eye on that. Well, that's going to do it for a Friday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Running a little short as looking forward to spending some time on the Easter holiday weekend. Hope you have a phenomenal, safe Easter weekend. We will be back with you Monday morning live, 7 o'clock on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And, of course, 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great and safe weekend. Happy Easter. We're back with you Monday morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.